Today's shiur is Masechet Bava Kama, Daf Kuf Tes Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Kuf Tes Vav Amud Beis, 10 lines from the bottom of Amar. So we discussed in the end of the previous shiur that if we have barrels of truma that are tamei, barrels of tevel actually, that are tamei, and we have to take off truma from them, so there's a challenge. What can you do with truma tamei? We spoke about barrels of oil and about barrels of wine. So barrels of oil, we said, can be used, even though we can't eat that truma, if it's tamei, we could use it as fuel. But wine, we didn't know what to do with. And that's what the Gemara said. Amamar, we learned in the previous year, v'shem l'yasake, we have 10 barrels of tamei tevel oil. Don't designate one as truma, or if it's gilui, if they were exposed to possibly snake drinking from it, and they kept sakayim. We're concerned because if that barrel that's tamei, or that barrel that's breaking, or it's gilui, if it's oil, the kayin can't use, and it's unfair to make the kayin have that loss. So the Gemara explains. But wine, we're not worried about, because there's nothing you can do with tamei wine anyway. Ask Gemara, Maishna Shemen, why by oil are we concerned about the loss to the Kayin? The Roi Lahadlik, it could be used for fuel. Ask the Gemara, Yain Nami, Roi Lazilif. You could use wine to put it on the floor to give a good aroma. So why do we say that it doesn't really make a difference because there's no great loss involved? V'chitema, if you'll suggest, says the Gemara, Zilif Lab Milsehi. Nobody really spritzes wine on the floor. Ask the Gemara, wine that's bought for drinking, spend a seller for lager wine. But if you're buying wine to spritz on the floor for the good aroma, spend melug b'shtayim. You spend two slime for a lug of wine. So you see that aroma is very important. And as Rishonim point out, certainly nobody's going to suggest that we use wine for zilof as much as we use wine for drinking. And certainly nobody's going to suggest that everybody uses wine for zilof. What the Gemara here means to say, explained the Rishonim, is that someone who is interested in zilof, that population, is going to be ready and should be ready to spend more money on zilof than on drinking. And says the Gemara, we're talking about new wine. And new wine, you can't use for zilof. It doesn't have the aroma. Ask the Gemara, royally ashna. New wine can become old, just leave it. Answers the Gemara, osbel deta kala. You could leave it. But now we have a concern that if you leave it, you may end up using it for a non-permissible purpose. Ask the Gemara, if that's a concern, so sham name osbel deta kala. You should be concerned about oil. Why are we not worried about the oil that's tamei? We should be concerned that the kohen may come to eat it, which we said at the beginning of the shiur, you're not allowed to eat truma tamei. Says the Gemara, the manach b'kli mos. There's a way of preventing that concern. Put the oil into a mos keli, and nobody's going to drink from it, use it for food. Says the Gemara, so then you have the same approach you could do by yayin. Yayin nami manach le b'kli mos. Why don't you just put the wine in kli mos, and we don't have to worry that you'll drink it? Says the Gemara, hash the lazil of kaboile. You want to use the wine to spritz in your house to have a nice aroma. But kli mos kamanachle, nobody's going to do that. And therefore, we have no choice but to discard the wine. It's interesting to point out that this concept of osla de tekola, which we're going to discuss for a few more lines, is relevant la loch lamaisa. Where is it relevant la loch lamaisa? If somebody has olive oil that he used to light the candles in Hanukkah, and that's after Hanukkah, and he still has oil left in the cups, you can't use that oil for a regular purpose. So if you're a person that lights Shabbos candles with oil, fine. But if you don't, you can't use that oil for a non-mitzvah purpose. And to say, you know what, I'll put away the oil for a year, till next year Hanukkah. So our Gemara just taught us, we're concerned about takala, that you may come to use it for non-mitzvah purpose. And therefore, the halach is that if you have no other mitzvah use for that oil, on Chanukah, right after Chanukah, you should burn that oil. Says the Gemara, V'kala atma tanahi. This concept, are we concerned that something may happen, is actually suggests the Gemara machlokes tanoim. The Tanya. If you have a barrel of wine that's truma that got became tamei, v'shamayim v'tishafech. V'shamayim says spill it out. Because we're concerned that you may, tishafech hakol, spill it out, you shouldn't come to use it for a non-permissible purpose. V'shamayim tasazil. If you could use it for spritzing, we're not worried about takala. So the Rishonim explain, why is Beis Hillel not concerned for takala? So I saw two reasons. One reason is he says, use it up quickly and we don't have to worry. Another pshat is like this. According to Beis Shammai, because of the concern of takala, we're going to spill out this wine. So Beis Hillel hold, as much as takala is a concern, it isn't worthwhile to go spill out the tshuma. And therefore, when you're faced with these two considerations, it's better to pour out the wine. Better to use the wine, according to Beis Hillel. I'm going to make a compromise. I'm going to decide how to deal with this machlokes. The bias, where you have the wine at home, tasazilof, but suddenly if you have to transport it from far away, tishafek hakoil. Ikadamri, biyoshin, old wine, which is immediately usable for zilof, daloch is tasazilof, ubechadish, new wine, we're going to have to wait, as we said earlier, to make it old, to shafak hakol, don't wait because it's a takala. Amaloi, so they told him, enach rosh lishi machraz. This is an interesting concept, there's a long tosus here. What does enach rosh lishi machraz mean? So the simple pshat, the most Rishonim learn is as follows. What does achra typically mean? We have two opinions. And then, Beis Shammai holds one, Beis Hillel holds another opinion. And then another mandam, which is Shmuel Rabbi Yossi in our Gemara, agrees in certain aspects with Beis Shammai, and in certain aspects he agrees with Beis Hillel. So wherever he agrees with Beis Shammai, it's two against one. Wherever he agrees with Beis Hillel, it's two against one. But in our Gemara, these distinctions that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is making, close or far, new or old, aren't part of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai's concepts, and therefore they don't figure in making an achra. That's one pshat. Another pshat is Rav Shmuel Rav Yossi was the third generation after Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Ein achra shlishish machras. Achra, the three generations later, you're going to come and make a decision between Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. You're not qualified. You're not the person that can make that decision. And in fact, the Mefarshim, this is Rabbeinu Hananel's pshat, the Tosfos quotes, Mefarshim focus on this pshat. Because the Gemara says, En achroa shlishi machraz. As I said, he was a third generation. What does that mean? What would be if he were the second generation? So some say it wouldn't make a difference if it's the second or it's third. The Gemara is just being accurate because he happened to have been the third generation. If he would have been the same, second generation would have been the same. Others, however, say no. Specifically because he was so far removed and he never even met Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. So he's not the person that can make achroa between Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. But had he lived in the times of Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, learned by Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, even though he wasn't on the level of Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, then perhaps he would be qualified to make achra. So we learned in the Mishnah, Im Amaloi, Ani Atzeh Shalach, I'll save what you'll, again, the Mishnah spoke about two situations. One was where somebody's honey was getting lost, and he told the person who's losing his honey, I'll pick it up, but you're going to have to give me the value. Was donkey was getting lost, and I said, I'll pick it up, you're going to have to pay me in full. So if he stipulated that, then we follow his stipulation. Ask the Gemara, Amai, why is that acceptable, the name of Meshat and Nibach? There's a concept that I could say, I didn't really mean it. Miloy Tanya, there's a Braisa. Hareisha Yibarech Mebeis Asurim. There's somebody who was jailed improperly, and he had this opportunity to run away. V'oisim Mebaris Lufonov. And there's a ferry right there that can help him escape. But the guy who's running the ferry now is playing games. He says, you know, I'm not going. So he says, I'll pay you a tremendous amount. A dinner to cross the ferry was a lot of money. And then he does it. Ein loy elischaroi. You only have to pay him the regular fair price. Alma, why do you only have to pay him the regular fair price? Because Amalei, even though he was agreeable to pay the dinner, he could say, Mishatani bach. I didn't really mean it. I just was under duress. So hoch nami lemele mishatani bach. Why shouldn't he be able to say mishatani bach? And there's a big machloikus rishonim. Under which circumstances can you say mishatani bach? Some say it's only in the circumstance like an Al Gemara, where he was being taken advantage. To charge a dinner for something that's worth a fraction of a dinner, if you treat me improperly, I could act improperly towards you. Another pshat that the Rishonim suggest, and there are obviously halachic ramifications to these different pshatim, is that here he was under pressure. He had to escape. So people say things when they're under pressure that they don't really mean. A third pshat is that here we, as I said earlier, are referring to a situation where this person was running away because he was jailed illegally. Everybody has the responsibility to help that individual. And since everybody has the responsibility to help individual, so really the ferry driver has no right to ask for money at all, or certainly he has an obligation to do the mitzvah of helping this person escape, not to take advantage, he certainly has no right. Where does this come up? Lahaloch l'maisa. A number of areas that I saw that the Pesach can discuss. One is a doctor. Let's say a doctor takes an exorbitant fee. Could a doctor take an exorbitant fee to treat a patient? Or could the patient say no? So again, based on the different pshatim we give, it would have different psak. Or another example I saw, similar question, is could somebody take an exorbitant fee for a medicine? Or I saw another interesting shaila that the Pesach can discuss. A shatchan, a matchmaker, is prepared to arrange a shidduch, but they say up front, if we're going to be successful, we want a very high shatchanis. Do you have to, and the boy, the girl, their families are anxious to get married, and they say yes. And then afterwards, he's successful, do you have to pay that exorbitant fee? The Paiskim, however, interesting about a shatchanis, I saw a tshuva from the Meram Rattenberg that wants to draw a distinction between a professional shatchan and a non-professional shatchan. He says, professional shatchan, that's his fee. You don't have to use him. A non-professional maybe doesn't have that. It's anyway not his line. He maybe doesn't have a right to take an exorbitant fee. The Paiskim do ask, isn't there a concept of a no? That whenever in halacha we find, we've discussed this many times, where you overcharge, there's a concept of a no. So I saw two answers to that question. One answer is that a no is only applicable when you're selling something. Here, he's not selling an actual tangible item. He's only selling a service. So there's no inor. Or they say that even if there is a concept of inor by service related activity, if both parties enter into the relationship up front, knowing that they're agreeable to this, so then there's no issue. Everybody knew what they're getting into. There is no issue of inor. So says the Gemara, the same thing here. My honey is leaking, and you come and you want an exorbitant fee, so I said it, but I didn't mean it. Mishata nibach, answers the Gemara. So therefore asked the Gemara, Hoch nami, why now, Mishnah, can't we apply the same concept of lemele mishata nibach? Says the Gemara, holy dom el sefer. The case of our Mishnah is similar to the sefer of that Mishnah. Where the Mishnah, where it says there, vim amloi tells it, then is a b'schorcha. Where again, he offers the ferry driver a dinner, b'vireinim, he has to pay the exorbitant fee. And the question is obvious. Maishna reisha, maishna seifa. Why in the reisha could he say mishata nibach and not pay the exorbitant fee? And in the seifa, must he pay the exorbitant fee? Om Rabbi Bachama. But Silat has shoyla dogim in a yam. It's referring to a ferry driver who has no interest in driving a ferry. He has an interest in fishing. And he's saying, by you telling me to drive you across the river and interrupt my fishing, I'm going to lose all of the opportunity that I can have in having fish. I'm going to lose all the fish that I could have caught that are indeed worth a dinner. Therefore, you have to pay the dinner. And therefore, explains the Gemara, that is also the case of our Mishnah. That our Mishnah is referring to a situation where the person says, you want me to save your honey? And the time I saved your honey, I could have done something else. In the time I said, you donkey, I could have done something else that would have earned me this kind of a fee. The Rishonim debate the following question. What would be the din? The person says, I could have earned in this time fishing, and therefore I want the dinner. But let's say, as successful as a fisherman he would be, he couldn't have caught in the time it takes to ferry this prisoner across a dinner. Dinner was a tremendous amount of money. So he says, okay, you want to get paid for what you would have lost, but a dinner is not what you would have lost. Does he still get a dinner? Or could the person say, fine, I have to pay you more than maybe the regular fee, but I don't have to pay you something that you would have never earned anyway. It's actually machlokes rishonim. Some rishonim say once he's paying him, the person could say, I maybe would have been very lucky and very successful. Or some rishonim say that no, even I'm collecting what I could have earned, I only could collect as much as I potentially could have earned. I can't collect more than that. We learned further in the Mishnah, Shatav Nara Chamari, my donkey is about to drown. The chamar chaveri shloyaf mana. Your donkey is worth $100. My donkey is worth $100. Yours is worth $200. And we spoke about the case where I'm ready to let mine drown in order to save yours. So the question, obviously, is when we learned the Mishnah, the two cases of the Mishnah are essentially the same. Why do we have to have two cases of the Mishnah that teach us the exact same din? Answers the Mevet Tzricha. We need to have both cases, although they're really the same. The Ashmina Kamaisa, if we only taught the case about the wine and the honey, Hasam the Chiparish, there we learned the halacha is that if the person who's saving the other person's honey explicitly says, Yav, that I'm only going to do it if you give me the value of the honey, Yav le demek kula, v'shin v'yadayim kaposit. There, the honey is falling out. There, he's pouring out his wine to save your honey. So if I'm pouring my wine to save your honey, I'm entitled to name my price. However, by the donkey, Aval Hoch de Memela. My donkey is not that I'm doing something to make my donkey drown to save your donkey. All we're doing here is that I'm letting my donkey drown in order to save your donkey. So maybe it's different. Name Ein Lo Elo Schar. That even if I explicitly said I want more, I should not be entitled. Or on the other hand, V'yashmin es Seifa, if we only had the case of the donkey, Hochu de Bestama Ein Lo Schar, that if I didn't say that I want more than my wage, I won't get more than my wage. Mishnah Meila, because I really didn't do anything. I didn't cause my donkey to drown. Aval Hassam, in the Reisha, to be a Dayim, where I actually poured out my wine, Eima Fil Bestama, even if I didn't stipulate, I should be entitled, Yovle de Mekula, Sricha, that's why I need both. That's why we had our both cases. Ask the Gemara another question. Boy Menei Rav Kahana Merav. Yard Lahatzel, I went to save your donkey, and at the expense of being prepared to let my donkey drown, but I lucked out. For all of Shaloi, Me'elav, my donkey is anyway ends up being saved. Mahu. So the simple way of learning the Gemara, which is the way Rashi learns the Gemara, is do we say that the only reason you were prepared to pay me this high fee because I was ready to give up my donkey? But here I didn't give up my donkey. My donkey is fine. Or do we say the actual preparation that I was prepared to let my donkey die, even though it didn't end up dying, doesn't change the reality that as soon as I entered in the deal, you have to keep your side of the bargain. Amalei, Mishmayim Rechamelei. I had Rechmanos. They made me a nest from Shemayim, and therefore it's my good luck, and I'm still entitled to collect my whole fee. And the Gemara quotes such an incident. Kihad Rav Safra have a ka'azal b'sharta. Rav Safra was part of a group of people that were traveling. Lavinu ahu arei. And there was a lion that escorted them to protect them. Kalaila, so to take care of this lion that was taking care of them, koshada l'chadru the mechabinai. Every night, somebody would give up a donkey that the lion should have what to eat. The kachel. So the lion should have what to eat, and they would continue on their trip. Kimot azamni de Rav Safra. When Rav Safra's time came, shad lechamra. So he had to keep his part of the deal. So he offered his donkey that night. However, v'loyachli. The donkey didn't eat, the lion didn't eat up Rav Safra's donkey. So now the question was, does Rav Safra have a right to keep that donkey? It says the Gemara, Kodim Rav Safra v'zachabay. Rav Zachra took back his line. Amalei Rav Achma Difta L'Ravina, Lamalei L'Mizkibay, why does he have to take ownership? Ni the ki afgrei when he was mafgrit. Adata da ari afgrei. He only was mafgrit in order that the lion should eat it. If the lion ended up not eating it, adata the kulama lo afgrei. Amalei Rav Safra. Rav Safra said, indeed, the rafch the milsa hudamid. He really didn't have to be zoichet. His entire hefker was only in order that the lion should eat it. And if the lion doesn't eat it, then it's automatically his. Similarly, in our Gemara, I was ready to give up my donkey. But if I didn't have to, that doesn't change that you have to pay me what we agreed. The Nesivis explains the Gemara in a very beautiful way. Because normally the halacha is that if you mafka something and you want to take possession of it, you have to do a kinyan. So why here wouldn't a kinyan be required? So Nesivis says that here there wasn't hefker. Really, that's Pshat and Taisus. There was only Yush. So he wasn't mafgrit. When you mafka something, you give it up completely. He was only miyash. And therefore, since he was only miyash, if the reason for the Yush is no longer here, the lion didn't eat it, then there's no reason that he really has to take ownership. But he did, just l'rafch l'mils, as the Gemara says. So Mepharshim asked an obvious question. So good, this night, Rav Safra didn't have to give up his lion, his donkey, because the lion didn't eat it. But he should have to give up his donkey the next night. Tonight, he didn't have to. What's going to be the next night? So far as we say, because of this question, that this was the last night, this story happened at the last night they were on the road. And the next night, they were already back at home, and they didn't need the lion to escort them and feed the lion. This Gemara is actually the basis for a very, very famous Shiloh. Very common shalom. Let's say somebody, chas v'shalom, gets into a car accident, or somebody causes damage to someone else. It's appropriate to ask the shalom as we start finishing Masechta Bava Kama. And the person who he caused damage to has insurance. Health insurance, fire insurance, all types of insurance. So can the mazik say to the nizik, you don't need me to pay, the insurance company is going to pay anyway. So without going into the question that his premiums are going to go up, the Nizik's premiums are going to go up, because the premiums going up, as the Miches Yitzchak says, is really only a grumma. So we know, he's learned many times, that a grumma ben Nizakin is potter. Does the Mazik say, your insurance will cover you? Or does Nizik have a right to say, no, you did damage, we've learned in our Masechta, if you do damage, you pay. So the Marsham discusses the Shaila, the Mechas Yitzchak discusses the Shaila, many Paiskim discuss the Shaila, and they say that the Shaila is not our Gemara. Because in our Gemara, Rav Safra didn't do anything. It just happened by itself. That's why they have no right to have any claims against him. But in a case where somebody was Mazik, even though the Nizik has coverage, the Mazik still has to pay for the Hezek he does. Says the Gemara Vaita. Barmine Rab Mirebi. Yod lahatzav lo hitzel. The opposite example. I entered into this relationship with the condition I'm going to save your animal, but I wasn't successful. Mahu. Omay v'zu shayla. This is a good shayla. Ein lo el eschara. He's only entitled to minimum wage. He's not entitled to more. There's machlokes rishonim. When it says ein lo el eschara, does it mean the minimum wage he's entitled under all circumstances, or is he only entitled to that minimum wage if he spoke it out? Most of us would say the minimum wage he's entitled under all circumstances. Because if a worker works for you, even if he's not successful, that doesn't change your obligation to pay him. And there's a beautiful vart from the Emek Dover to prove that point. Because the Emek Dover says, we find that when Noach, by the Teva, sent out the Oirev to go see Hakalu Hamayim, if the water receded and came back because the water hadn't received it, the Pasuk says the Noach stuck out his hand and took him back in. So Emek Dover says, what does the Pasuk have to say that he stuck out his hand, took him back in? The point is, he came back. There's no water receding. Says the Emek Dover, the Torah is teaching us a tremendous lesson. He sent him on a mission. He didn't accomplish anything. So you would think that if your worker doesn't accomplish anything, you don't owe him any gratitude. Says the Torah, you owe your worker gratitude if he tried, even if he wasn't successful. Says the Gemara, Eisvei, Hasoiches Apoyo, it says in a Braisa, somebody hires a worker. These were different cabbage quince with different foods that were very beneficial for sick individuals. And he finds, by the time he delivers the food, that the patient died. Or Baruch Hashem, he got better, and he doesn't need the food. Still, the halacha is, he has to pay everything that was stipulated. Here we're saying you don't pay everything, you only pay the minimum wage. You can't compare the two situations. He did his job in full. He was told to bring these fruits, and he did. Hacha, he didn't do anything. He was supposed to save the donkey, and he didn't save the donkey. Hacha, the Rishonim debate a different question. Interesting question. Again, the person who lost the donkey and I got into an arrangement that he's going to pay me a higher fee to save his donkey. And his donkey got saved, but not because of me. His donkey got saved by itself. And my entire... Here the Gemara spoke about the case where the donkey died. What about the case just the opposite? Where the donkey got saved, but not because of my effort. It got saved anyway. Am I entitled to the higher fee? Because Baruch Hashem, the donkey is here. Or am I not entitled to the higher fee? Because it didn't come back because of me. Says the Gemara. Tanabon. There was a group that was traveling in the Midbar. And there's somebody coming to kill them. So now, we want to pay them ransom. So the question is, how do we make the calculation? Do we say there are 10 people here, and everybody has to pay an equal share? Or, just the way the Rishonim explained the Gemara, we look at how much money everybody in this group is carrying, and the more money you carry, the more you have to lose. And therefore, the more money you have to... the more you're carrying, the more you have to lose. And proportionally, according to the amount of money you're carrying, that's the amount of money you'll have to give. So the Gemara says, "Mechashvin l'fi mamon." We look at how much money each person is carrying, and based on that, that's what's given. Mechashvin l'fi nefashos. But we don't look at how many people. However, that's when they were being attacked. And the Mefarshim ask, why is this different than a machteres that we just learned in the previous year? Machteres is a situation of sakonas nefashos. The Mefarshim say machteres, since it's done without any pre-knowledge, the owner of the home doesn't know that this person is about to sneak in, so that's a situation of sakonas nefashos. Here, they knew what's happening, and that's why it's not sakonas nefashos. However, there's a group that's traveling, and they upfront hire somebody to lead them. There, mechashven afl fi nefashos. What does mechashven afl fi nefashos mean? The Rishonim explained it's a 50-50 situation. Half the fee is determined, each person pays an equal amount, and half the fee is determined by how much money they're carrying. However, this all is where there is no set minig. Where there's a set minig, we follow the minig hamakom. Mefarshim make a number of points. How do we know that it's the minig hamakom? The minig hamakom is determined when it happens three times. Furthermore, the Rishonim say that even though, as we know, typically women, children are not reliable to be Edim, to say that this is the minig hamakom, even women and children are acceptable. Rishonim hachamorim, furthermore, the donkey drivers can make a stipulation amongst themselves, that if they have a group traveling together, anybody who loses the donkey, they all have to gather together to replace that donkey. However, if the person lost his donkey because of negligence, we don't have to replace the donkey. But if somebody lost a donkey, but honest, it wasn't negligent, but me didn't like. So let's say a person lost a donkey. He says, you know what? Instead of giving me a donkey, give me money. Tenuli, give me the value of a donkey. Ven-ni-yashmer. But I'll still be part of your group. I just don't need a donkey. The halacha is ain't shemeloi. Pshita. Obviously, we're part of a group. Everybody has a donkey. And that's the deal. Answers the Gemara. Le-tzrichet is-le-cham rachina. I'm part of this group, and I had two donkeys. And one of my donkeys died. Bonus. And the deal is that everybody now has to chip in together to pay for this donkey that's missing. And I can't say, just give me the money. So the Gemara suggests, why? Because then I won't really do the job of being part of the group because I don't have a donkey. But let's say I already have a donkey here anyway. So I'm going to continue being active because the donkey I have left, no, if I have two donkeys here, I'm going to be more active, I'm going to be more vigilant than if I have only one donkey. And therefore, there is a deal, and the other people in the group have to keep their part of the deal in replacing the donkey, but they could insist on giving a donkey instead of just giving money, because even though I already have one donkey, because the more donkeys I have here, the better a job I'll do. The Rishonim point out that how do these deals work? Do we have to have the consent of all the people in the group for the deal to be binding? Or if we have most of the people traveling in a group and most of the people are prepared to enter into a deal, everybody else has to follow even though they don't want to. This conversation, this sugya that we're learning, that we're going to continue learning in a moment, other situations, how do we make a calculation how much everybody has to pay as part of a group, keeps on coming up in halacha. And in fact, in halacha, there you could almost say stiras, the contradictions. The halacha keeps on discussing if you want to build a mikveh in a city, you want to build a shul in a city, you want to hire a rav in a city, you want to build a yeshiva in a city. How do you tax the people? How do you tax the members of the community? And again, sometimes the halacha seems to say that everybody has to pay equal, everybody, and sometimes we say we pay according to the income, what we would know as a progressive tax. So what is the law? So there's really no hard and fast rule. The closest that I've seen that the Pekaiskim want to suggest is that we have to see how essential of a service this is to the community. A mikveh, a yeshiva, they say, which is essential for a Jewish community, there we go according to the income, because we want everybody to participate according to their means. Something which is not as essential, we sometimes go according to the nefashos. Sometimes we make, as the Gemara just did, make some sort of a combination, mammon and the nefashos. Continues the Gemara. Tanaman, finish ayosim alachas miyam. There was a ship that was traveling in the yam. Amin Allah nachsh latava. And there's a wave that's about to cause the ship to drown. The kilva masa. And as we know, what you do is you try to lighten the load of the ship. Which means as follows. Let's say they make up that everybody has to drop 10 pounds off the boat to light the load. You're carrying metal. I'm carrying gold. 10 pounds of metal is a lot less valuable than 10 pounds of gold. The halacha is everybody has to give 10 pounds. The only thing that Rashi, this is the way the Mefarshim explained, Rashi says is as follows. That let's say you dropped 10 pounds of metal, and I dropped 10 pounds of gold. That's what it is. But let's say before, worth coming to the shear, before we drop these things, I go to you and I tell you, no, you should drop 20 pounds of metal, so I shouldn't have to drop any gold, and I'll reimburse you for the extra 10 pounds of metal that you're dropping, instead that I should have to drop gold. There I could force you to do that, said the Mefarshim in Rashi. However, if there's a specific minig amongst the boats, amongst ships in such situation, you follow the minig amokim. Furthermore, again, like we had previously, all ships that are traveling together can make an agreement. If anybody loses a ship, another one should replace it. However, says the Gemara, if a ship was lost because of negligent, emamidim, we don't have to replace it. Shloi b'kisya, but if it wasn't because of negligent, emamidim le, we have to replace it. Vimpirish, l'mokim she'en asfinas holchim. Let's say one of the ships went to a place where ships normally don't travel, So that's considered a pshia, that's considered negligence, and Eim Amidim, that ship doesn't have to be replaced. Asking my pshita, obviously, if I took the boat where it wasn't supposed to travel, I was negligent. Answers the Gemara, loy tzricha. The benissin machaki chad ashla, or the tishrei machaki trey ashli. Ashli is what we would call nowadays a knot. It's a certain amount off the bank. Now we know in those countries, it rained in the winter. In the summer, it didn't rain. So when Nisan comes around, there's a lot more water than Tishrei. So Nisan, you could travel a lot closer to the riverbank than Tishrei. And what happened here was, the Menissan Machaki Charashla, and Nisan, they only travel one knot away from the riverbank. Or Metishrei, since there's not that much water, Machaki Treyishli, you travel two knots away. This person wasn't careful, and he went in Nisan, where you don't have to go so far away from the riverbank, he went into the deeper water, and the ship drowned. Since he's accustomed to traveling there in Tishrei, so even though he traveled there in Nisan, which he shouldn't have done, it should not be considered negligent, because he used to traveling there. Half the year, you have to travel there. Kamashlo, no, you have to be careful. If that's not where you're supposed to travel in Nisan, if you travel there in Nisan, it's considered negligence. Continues the Gemara. Tana Bonin. Shiyar Shais Malchus to Midbar. There was a group that's traveling the Midbar. The Ahmed Gaius Vatarfa. And a group came and attacked them. The Ahmed Echad Vahitzel. And somebody gets up and he fights them off. The Aloch is, Hitzel Amsa. He doesn't keep everything. It has to be pooled. Everybody takes back their portion. However, if prior to doing this, from Omar, Ani Atzel Atzmi, he makes a stipulation. I'm ready to put my life into danger to fight them off, but whatever I save becomes mine. The loch is Hitzel Atzmi. Then it becomes his. Ask the Gemara, exactly what are the circumstances of this brisa? If it could have been saved even without my efforts, then I feel safe in Namilemtsa. So just because I said it shouldn't mean that it all becomes mine. If, on the other hand, the Lo Yachal Hatzel, that I'm the only one that could have saved it, and everybody else was helpless here, I feel Resh Namilemtsa. So why do I have to make a stipulation? Answers the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Bacham, the Gemara gives a number of explanations. The first explanation is, we're referring to the situation of shutfim. A partner normally can't just dissolve a partnership. If you want to dissolve a partnership, you have to have all the partners agree. Here, since it's under a situation of duress, I, who am a partner with the other members of the group, I could unilaterally decide to break the partnership. However, it teaches us the brisa. When can I unilaterally break this partnership? Omar, only if I say so explicitly, Polig, could I break the partnership. Loy Omar, if I didn't make any announcement, Loy Polig, I don't have the right to break the partnership. Rav Omar, Rav gives a different explanation. Hoch v'peyal miskinen. We're referring here that I am a worker for this group. Ukurav, and it follows Rav's din. Dom Rav, poil yoch lachsboy afil b'chatzei yoy. A worker to walk out in the middle of the day. So here I was working, so everything I'm doing belongs to my employers. I could walk out in the middle of the day. The kama, however, if I say so that I'm walking out, fine. However, kama de loy hadabay, until I explicitly walk out, kibirishusay the balabayas dummy. I'm still considered part of your worker unless I explicitly quit. However, says the Gemara, v'chi hadabay, if I walk out, then it's acceptable. Tamach rinuhu. There's another reason why a worker could always walk out in the middle of a job. Diksiv, keli b'nei Yisrael avodim, v'lai avodim l'avodim. Nobody's a slave to anyone else. No Jew is a slave to anyone else. As the Rabbeinu Yoyne explains, part of our religion is that we're only slaves to one. We're slaves to God. And if we can't walk out of a job, then we're slaves to our employers, and that is not acceptable. However, there are a number of points to make. The Paiskim say that here it's referring to a situation where you, the employer, don't really have many options because it was going to get lost anyway. But let's say I'm a worker for you. You hired me to do a job. So the halacha indeed is that I'm allowed to walk out in the middle of the day. But I'm only allowed to walk out in the middle of the day if it's not going to cause you any specific damage. That means you hired me to paint the room. I should finish my job. But if I don't finish my job, so you'll have to find somebody else to paint the other half of the room. But let's say if you walk out in the middle of the job, so what was done already will end up being ruined, then you're not allowed to walk out in the middle of the job. The Chassam Sofer says, based on this Gemara, he says this in a tshuva, la'aloch la'maisa, that a person should never sign more than a 3-year contract for a job. Because the Gemara says, k'li b'nei Yisrael avodim, v'loy avodim la'avodim, and signing up that you're going to take a job for more than 3 years is a violation of this concept. But he goes on to say that doesn't mean that you speak about Rabbonim, he speaks about there, that you're allowed to fire your Rav because he only has a 3-year contract. He says the Rav should only sign a 3-year contract, but the Kehillah has no right to fire him. Says the Gemara, Rav Ashi Amar, K'shoch l'hatzli dey t'chak. It's a situation where he could save it, but not easily. Goli dati, if he says explicitly, I'm doing it for myself, then it's la'atzmoy. Loi goli dati, then we say la'emtza, it goes, everybody gets their portion. The Rishonim also discuss, let's say, again, I'm working with this group, the cases that we just described, and I'm carrying whatever I'm carrying, and the rest of the people are carrying what they're carrying, and I make a stipulation. I came to the shir. So I knew to make a stipulation. I make a stipulation, whatever I save is for me. What does that mean? Does that mean that I keep everything? Or does it mean that I'm allowed to take out what was mine? I don't have to shir. But I'm not entitled to get more than was mine. I take out mine, and then the rest of the people will divide what was left. Says the Mishnah, Hagazel sod mechaveret. Somebody steals a sod from somebody else, v'notlu mesikin, and it was, and then somebody took it away from the gazlan. Says the Mishnah, Imax medina hi, if this is a problem that everybody's suffering from, oimelai reishal cholafanecha. Imax mesagazlan, but if it's that the government or the Masikin who are taking away people's fields are only after this gazlan, they're not after everybody, then chayv l'amad lo yisod acher. And there are two basic pshatim in the Rishonim how to understand this Gemara, this Mishnah. Some Rishonim say that even though typically the halacha is, as we learned and we'll discuss, karka ein an exelis, and therefore the gazlan should always be able to say, hareishal chalaf adnecha, here Chazal made a specific zera that since he stole the field, and it's because of him that the Mitzikin took it away, he should have to replace it. Another pshat that the Mefarshim say is just the opposite almost. Even though typically, by karki, you could say, because I could tell the person who I stole from, go. But here, the person can't go back to his field, because the Mitzikin, who are people that this person can't prevail over, are on the field. And since here it's a situation where you can't say a racial chalafanecha, the din of a racial chalafanecha doesn't apply. Says the Gemara. Aram Nachma, Yitzchak, the Gemara goes into a spelling issue. Mandatani mesikin lemishtabish. The one that uses the word mesikin in the Mishnah is not incorrect. Or mandatani mesikin lemishtabish. And if you use the word mesikin, it's fine. Mandatani mesikin lemishtabish. The tziv, b'motzer, b'motzik. When people who cause you pain. Or mandatani mesikin lemishtabish. The one that says mesikin is not incorrect. The ksiv yorish atzlaltzel umetagaminen yechsin esakah. Machloikus rishonim, what does atzlaltzel mean? Some rishonim, Rashi explains that tzlaltzel means arba, it means locust, that eat up the field. Taisa says tzlaltzel means the enemy. Mesikin means the enemy that take away your field.